All right, this is the last episode of the show. This is part two of our final farewell. Hopefully everybody's listened to the In Addition to Everything Else episode. That was our part one. But yeah, so this is it. Thank God we got here. Thank God this is done. But yes, congrats to listeners too if you made it here, and thank you very much for listening to all of this again. All right, and with that, let's just jump in. Let's start. All right, so for anybody that, I don't know how we're going to have done this, but I'm sure we've started by now. I'm sure we probably have not run through that entire list ourselves, in one shot at least, but we'll be splicing it in as we go for the rest of this thing. But Clifford, here we are. Here we are at the final episode, our final countdown.
Yes, indeed.
It's been a very long time in the making. Literal years more than I thought it would take.
Same here. I maybe didn't do the math, but I had no idea that this would last so long. But it's been a tremendous, fulfilling journey all throughout.
Yeah. So, all right. So one thing, I mean, we had more time because of the pandemic, and yet still it took us literally at least a year longer than I expected. So
yeah,
really couldn't believe what we would do if we didn't have. I mean, we'd probably just be starting Return of the King or something crazy. But anyways, yeah. I mean, we'll talk. I think I'll probably bring this up a little bit later. But I mean, stuff kept coming up, especially over the past year or two. But like other stuff, like we both had more stuff going on too that got in the way. So.
I think I've moved three times since we started this.
Yeah, you were
including halfway across the country.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you're going to count that a little bit. You were in Chicago, I guess. Yeah, I guess that's fair. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I have also moved. Yes. So, I don't know. So it's a lot. But all right. I think the first thing, though, this is always something I've like looked forward to doing too. Or I always kind of look forward to doing it in general, but the acknowledgments, Clifford. All right, who are we thanking here? Who do you want to thank? You start us off.
Well, first of all, to all of our listeners, and especially those who sent in reviews and encouragement.
Yes.
Also, a special shout out to Morgan. Yes. She's been an amazing artist, done artwork for many, many of the episodes. And has, I'd say, closest to being a third host, perhaps,
in the show. She's also got the talent of just pulling out exactly what a picture should look like when I try to crappily doodle it.
If any of you follow the Instagram, Patrick has some lovely drawings of his that Morgan made even more beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've had... I mean, I don't know. For all of Return of the King, we've been caught up with all sorts of stuff. But I don't know. Hopefully someday we can finish the drawings. But yeah, it's fallen off the wagon for a little bit here, taking a dip. But hopefully we'll finish them soon. Yeah, so also to echo Clifford, everybody listening to this has been awesome. It's been really cool to see, especially everybody that's reached out, giving us encouragement and support. Very cool to hear from you guys. Yeah, big deal. Thank you again. Even people listening in the very distant future who've gotten to this point, thank you for getting this point. This is made it worth it for us. So yes.
Definitely.
All right. Then next set of people to think, probably all the people's books I relied on most. not really in any particular order, but Tom Should Be First. The two books that I was quoting most from his are The Author of the Century and The Road to Middle Earth. Both worth the read. They're kind of the same thing, but come at it from the different perspectives. So they're both actually refreshing, good reads. One of them, the first couple chapters is tough, so don't get discouraged. next is Joseph Pierce. So he has like three books. So he's got Bilbo's Journey, which I use for The Hobbit, Frodo's Journey, which I use for Lord of the Rings, and then Tolkien, Man and Myth. All three of those are good. The Tolkien, Man and Myth, I thought it was just going to be another biography of Tolkien. It was not. It was a look at, I don't know, his literature writing, I guess, you know. So that's more what I would want, I guess. Fleming Rutledge, we quoted her a bunch. She's the most prominent female whose book I read. Battle for Middle Earth, very interesting book. I actually finished that one in tandem with Lord of the Rings because she wrote it as the story goes on, so I could read it just with her, or as we did the show, I guess. John Garth, Tolkien and the Great War. That is probably my single most favorite supplementary book on Tolkien because I was blown away, didn't expect it. Very great book. And then his other one, it's do you remember what it was? We bought it together in Boulder, at the Boulder bookstore. It's like, it's the Places of Middle Earth or Worlds of Middle Earth. It's packed up somewhere. So like, I didn't go grab it. But anyways, John Garth, Middle Earth Maps book. It's a great one. Peter Crave, The Philosophy of Tolkien. That was another excellent read. He's
The Worlds of J.R.R. Tolkien.
Yeah, that sounds right. Okay. Yeah. I knew it was Places, Worlds, something like that. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, Peter Crave, The Philosophy of Tolkien. That was another excellent book. He brings up, I don't know, he's a very super genius guy, but then he writes for the ordinary person, and he's clever too. So heavily reliant on that one at places as well. And then Humphrey Carpenter, he's the one that wrote the Tolkien biography, like actually talked to Tolkien, and Tolkien's like, okay, I get it. Somebody's going to write a biography about me. Yes, you can interview me and do this. And then he was also the one that compiled the letters of J.R.R. Tolkien, which are pretty damn cool and quite an amazing resource. You know, you don't get, like, because everything's drafted on, you know, Word at this point, you know, that kind of stuff just won't exist in the future. Mm. So very cool that somebody could kind of compile as much as they did. Then, of course, Christopher Tolkien going so hard through all his dad's notes, all of that work, understanding it, helping his dad formulate Lord of the Rings, all 12 histories of Middle Earth, Unfinished Tales, The Silmarillion. Pretty big deal, very big deal. All those books worth checking out. And then, of course, J.R.R. Tolkien himself. Pretty, well, I don't know, you know, he's had the whole podcast about him. And pretty amazing. We're going to keep getting into it here with this episode. Like, I don't know. Basically, almost the lasting effects is what we really want to get into.
Definitely. One more acknowledgement to Patrick himself. If it weren't for Patrick, I never would have even read Lord of the Rings in the first place. He talked me into reading them in high school before watching the movies in a very classic fashion that many people don't get to experience.
Right.
And Patrick has completely put the team on his back for this whole endeavor. It's a tremendous accomplishment of reading and synthesizing, analyzing, editing, listening, coordinating, motivating, and learning. And it's super cool to see. So thank you, Patrick.
Well, thanks, Clifford, but thank you even more so for taking on this ambitious project. Because, as you know, sometimes I bite off more than I could chew. So it's very, very good to have you by my side and offer insights, sometimes right off the cuff, because sometimes I didn't give you lots of lead-in about what to expect. Because I wanted to make it more real, and I knew you could rise to that challenge and answer that. So it's definitely been better. I'll talk about this again, too. It's been way better having a friend to do this with than just try to, you know, sit out by yourself and almost come up with some sort of like lecture thing, you know. Not to say it's bad, but there's other people that could have done that better, but two together, I don't know. I think we made a much better team than, I don't know. I could have by myself, I guess.
Well, thank you, Patrick.
Of course, of course. All right. So, I don't know. Do you remember, like, what were your original goals when you wanted to do this show? And how did that compare to now? I don't know if I told you to do that one.
I think I set out, well, as probably all the listeners would have noticed, I've gotten to play the role of the slightly more naive reader.
Right.
Even though I had read Lord of the Rings before and read The Silmarillion before, so I was pretty familiar. I was kind of in the position of approaching everything more in line with the reader and kind of going to Patrick and his outside sources for additional insight into the book. So I think from the outset, my goal was kind of like develop a deeper understanding of Lord of the Rings, of Tolkien writing it, and getting, I guess, more of the backstory, the analysis. And I feel like far and above have fulfilled that goal and have learned so much more. Like you're hearing from this massive list of topics we've covered, I've learned and been forced to think about so many things that I never would have thought of had I not done this, and did not think I would encounter doing a podcast that's basically a book club of Lord of the Rings. So it's been super cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, my goal was kind of basic. Well, I don't know. It was simple. It was to make the best Tolkien podcast we possibly could. Okay. You know, dive into the deeper meanings of all the Lord of the Rings scenes, see what was influencing Tolkien, his life intellectually and spiritually and literarily. I guess, I don't know, that's not really a word. Anyways, but yeah, and it was like what Clifford's saying, like, you know, expose everybody to more literature, history stuff that's not very commonly talked about anymore, I guess, but even though maybe it should be, you know, it should get more playing time, right? But then also, overall too, have fun with it, encourage people to attempt to read these books themselves too, especially because that was really the original target audience. It's just, somebody who had seen the movies but struggle with the books, maybe they would listen to this and this would get them more amped up, fired up to want to read it.
Mm-hmm. Or it's almost like a guide along the way.
Right, right. Yeah. And I don't know. So that was an ambitious goal. It has taken, I don't know, quite a lot of our mental energy, I would say. Sometimes physical energy too, I mean, you know. And it was, so one of the losses of that was we've done basically like no promotion and outreach whatsoever for this. It wouldn't have been our strong suit to begin with, but I mean, yeah, mentally we were both spent to be doing that. So if you found this, I don't know, congrats, you're quite the sleuth, or really deep into Tolkien podcasts, and hopefully you enjoyed this one. We'll kind of leave it up to you guys to decide, have we achieved our goal or not.
Regrets, I've had a few, but then again, too few to mention.
All right, so next thing, Clifford, regrets. I've had a few. You? Any? No?
No, zero regrets.
Really?
No, I'm just joking. I could comment on some constructive, retrospective thoughts.
Sure. Yeah.
But in general, I like to be a no regrets type of person.
Fair enough. Okay. So I have a bunch of minor ones that in the grand scheme of things, they're not too big a deal. So to compile this huge list of all the topics that we talked about, I did have to re-listen to basically almost all of the show, and I did it on double speed because especially for some of the early episodes when we were first starting out, it was I don't know, a little, some parts were a cringe listen, just some parts, but it really is like the nature of the beast. I mean, because if you watch old movies, really really classic movies, there's still parts of those that are just cringeworthy. You know what I mean?
It's just stuff
literally doesn't age well. Okay. You know, I mean, that's just the reality of everything. And you can look at great podcasts, every single great podcast, and all of them, even if it's just 3 years old or 4 years old or 5 or 10 years old, there's stuff that, like, wow, that's cringeworthy too. I mean, it's like a cycling jersey where it's cool 1 year, and within 2 years, it just looks like the most bizarre, out there, bad, out of style thing, you know? So there's that. In The Hobbit, I was shocked. We quoted like nothing. and I thought, oh man, did we have some sort of more diligent process that we kept ourselves on time more? Or, you know, I don't know, because the episodes were shorter too, you know, like we were pretty on point with everything. But then we got to the Bilbo and Smaug conversation and we hadn't quoted anything. And I just figured, oh no, we probably hadn't hit our stride yet. We should have been quoting this, right? Potentially, the Lord of the Rings writing is significantly better than The Hobbit because of the way Tolkien decides to narrate it. But I don't know. Anyways, that's one little minor gripe about how, I guess, the difference of that. Another minor gripe, there was never a full Turin Turambar special. Tur got like 3, Beren got like 2, but Turin kind of just got lumped in our dragon special. No Farmer Giles of Ham special, sorry to everybody. No On Fairy Story special, again, sorry. But then again, we probably talked about everything important in that somewhere. And then, I really had wished, I actually thought about this for Lord of the Rings, that we could have gotten somebody else to read the quotes for us to have varied up the voices, but whatever. But then here's the only serious regret. Did we do this before at least I was fully prepared? This is what I'm thinking, all right? And I would say the answer is sure / definitely yes, okay? if you listen to it, every single episode, it could have been better than what it was, especially if we waited an extra couple days or couple weeks, couple months, even like another year, right? But I also picked up listening to it again. We were at the point where you can prepare as much as you want and you're never going to be ready until you just do it. You know, at some point, you just got to jump in, put your best foot forward and hope something good comes out of it. So, and then, you know, the two together conversation definitely would have been better than just one person going at this, even if that was more 100% scripted and actually got 100% of all the ideas that we wanted to get out more efficiently. I think it was ultimately way better having it as a conversation like this and more organic. Mm-hmm. I mean, we clearly had a bunch of outlines, but it was more organic than it could have been some other way. But,
sure, yeah. Sure.
I don't know. Those are my regrets.
my two regrets. One minor one, which is my own radical talent to forget character names from the Silmarillion.
Ooh.
And then on a more general note, I have some qualms that I gave Patrick such a tremendous workload in editing and preparing all the episodes. In case that wasn't evident to anyone, I was the total slacker of this hosting relationship, and Patrick pulled a lot of weight in putting everything together behind the scenes. So
the editing stuff, hey, neither of us knew how big this was going to be when we got ourselves in. And it was it's a good skill that I've developed there too. I mean, one of the
it's cool.
Yeah, kind of many skills, actually. So, I mean, yeah, no worries there at all. But, Clifford, should we get into it?
Let's do it.
The final countdown. The meat of this episode. We will actually talk some Lord of the Rings for this, not just dance around it and finish up. Clifford, we did our top 5 power ranking chapters of the Fellowship of the Ring. We did our top 5 power rankings of the Two Towers chapters. Mm-hmm. Tonight, twist. We're not going to do top 5 power rankings of Return of the King. We're going to do top 15 power rankings of Lord of the Rings chapters all together.
Mm.
All right. So.
Okay.
Should we go? Who should go first?
Why don't...
Wait, here. Which hand is this bottle cabinet?
Your right hand.
My right?
I don't know if she's your right.
That was my left.
All right, so I'm going to let you go first.
Okay.
All right, so this is your this is your 15th favorite chapter of Lord of the Rings. We're going to compare a list. There's no random games or anything with this one. We'll talk about it, and yeah, so... I guess we're doing 15 of these this time, so I guess we gotta be reasonable.
Keep it snappy. So 15, Stairs of Cirith Ungol.
You know what?
This is Sam and Frodo climbing up on their way up to Shelob's lair. They pass by the totally spooky, epic tower on their right. It's glowing green. They watch the army march out. Pretty cool.
Yeah. Setting. Well, all right. So that one made my top five in the Two Towers chapters. And I think it might even be ranked higher than some stuff that I put on my list, but that was an honorable mention for me this time. That was it. It didn't actually make my top 15 upon full review, even though I loved the Minas Morgul description, and I absolutely loved Frodo and Sam's conversation before going into the tunnel where they were talking about great stories never end, you know? So, all right, my 15th top chapter is The White Rider, when Gandalf comes back. It's Aragorn, Legolas, and Gimli there, and Gandalf, he's just so clairvoyant. You know, he's in white, so the tide's turned. He explains the whole scenario, like, Sauron, he's going to overreach because he's going to get scared and try to beat us too quickly, and that's going to be our one shot at, you know, getting through this. And it was just, I don't know, he laid it all out so much, and it was, well, it must have been surprising if you've never read it before or seen the movies, but yeah, so I don't know. Pretty great chapter. I couldn't leave it off my list, mostly because of the whole conversation you laid out, especially with Aragorn talking about like how Saruman's a wise fool. He literally said sophomore, you know? All right. What do you got for 14? Or no, I should go first. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah, you do 14.
Okay. So 14, I'm going to go Return of the King here. I'm going to do Many Partings. All right. So when they left Gondor, you know, they were everybody was in this chapter. Théoden got the awesome funeral, awesome goodbyes to everybody, especially Aragorn, and then saying goodbye to Galadriel, where the Three Rings were all sitting together at the campfire, communicating, knowing like this is the end of the elves, or at least the third age, you know, the second and the third age, because they were the protagonists for the second age too. So, you know, 6,000 years of history is going to be leaving with them, you know. Pretty cool.
So that did not make my top list, but The Steward and the King, which is the chapter right before, did.
Okay.
In 14, which is
the Downton Abbey chapter.
yes. Related in many ways. A very feel-good chapter, and you kind of see this epic history coming to fruition.
Yeah. That one did not make my list, actually. Yeah, but it was an honorable mention, but yeah, didn't make my list. All right, what do you got for 13?
13, Mount Doom. Ooh. Destruction of the Ring.
Ooh, this is deeper on me mine. But all right, why'd you like Mount Doom?
I mean, it's...
Pretty self-explanatory, but yeah.
It's self-explanatory. In some ways, it's the fulfillment of the entire quest. It's the ultimate struggle for Frodo and Sam. Yeah, I mean, in some ways it's like, it wasn't as much fun to read as other chapters, but I could not include it.
Right.
I felt like there are certain major plot points that just had to be in here as this, like, fundamental. True. If you had to cook Lord of the Rings down to like four chapters, this is probably one of them.
Yep. Yeah, well, I will reveal my reasons why I like it when it comes up on my list. But my 13 was House of the Healing. Okay, that's a often forgotten chapter, probably one of the low-key greatest chapters of the whole series, because it's not just Aragorn, the awesome macho conquering king. You know, he comes and he heals everybody, and then it's it was clever, it was fun, and it was reinforces the return of the king, Christ the King aspect, in a pretty surprisingly engaging way too, and unexpected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Totally agree. Yeah, good one. What'd you have for 12?
Oh, 12. Okay, so this is another unexpected one. This is probably the most unexpected on my list, I would have to say. The Last Debate. So, this was the one that
didn't... I had a feeling you were going to pick this one.
It didn't actually have a debate, right? And it was basically two half chapters, right? The first half was Legolas and Gimli recalling the getting to Pelargir part where the ghost took over the ships for him and then Aragorn set him free.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second part was Aragorn with Gandalf, Imrahil and Éomer basically reprising the Council of Elrond in many forms, saying like, this is what we got to do. This is, it's either extremely wise of us or it's extremely foolish or it's both at the same time. But this is what has to happen for the sake of Middle Earth. And all of them were basically the manliest, virtuous men you could ever ask for, kind of like in one scene, just coming together for that. So it was pretty awesome read, pretty righteous, I would have to say.
Nice, nice.
All right, what do you got for 12?
Okay, 12, I've got the Siege of Gondor.
Mm.
This is part of a string of totally epic chapters, I think, as we've mentioned in the episodes.
Oh, yeah.
So I was actually a little pressed to, like, I had to be sure that I was, like, actually capturing them, but not being too redundant.
Right, right.
But this one's just, it's loaded. This is, like, the... This is the true, or the closest thing to like a single true clash between good and evil on the battlefield in the whole book.
Yeah. Right. I would have to, so surprisingly, this only made my honorable mentions. That was,
okay.
That was, but that last scene.
Well,
sorry.
I was going to say, in contrast, the last two that you mentioned, I'd say would make my honorable mention, but did not make my list. So. Mm.
Yeah, I would, but that last scene of it, Gandalf versus the Witch King, I mean, that's lots of people's favorite moment of the whole trilogy. So, I mean, that's pretty amazing, I would have to say. And so, yeah, I mean, I was very torn leaving it off my list, especially that one, I would have to say. It was also a long chapter, though. That kind of went against a little bit, if I'm being honest. All right.
11, Road to Isengard.
Ooh, deeper for me. Yeah.
Okay, I thought so. I knew you were a big fan.
I love that one.
So this is right after Helm's Deep, sort of aftermath of Helm's Deep. Rohan, folks, Gandalf, passing north.
Right.
Rohan, folks, with Gandalf, with Aragorn, Legolas, and Gimli.
Yep.
Passing north through this mysterious forest that appeared on their way to Isengard.
Yep,
and then eventually reuniting with Merry and Pippin. So kind of a feel-good chapter, but also a very evocative and mysterious one.
Yeah. All right, my chapter 11?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In the House of Tom Bombadil. Pretty nice. Epic. I bet it's deeper for you, but you don't even have to confirm
that. It is.
I knew it would be. But yeah, so this was Tom Bombadil. This is, you know, I don't think... I don't know, right? Speaking from personally, I don't think I even liked him that much first read through.
Mm-hmm.
Further rereads through, you can't get enough of this guy. I mean, he's just wild. This is such an interesting twist to the beginning of the story, I guess. It's I love how not necessary it is, and yet how much it just deepens the story and the world. And it's just out there. I compared it to a high school retreat, you know, where you just kind of and take a couple of days off and time out of the world, you know. But it was, and such a character, lots of deep stuff to talk about. That's the Unfallen Beings, most notably, was probably one of our biggest topics of conversation there.
Mm-hmm.
All right, my number 10.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is where I have Mount Doom.
Okay,
Sam being such a boss puts it at the top 10. Okay. I mean, you can't not include it. Fair. Like you said. And then there was so much we spent an hour, just an hour, talking about the actual scene of the destruction of the ring. I mean, that's gave us so much to chew on. It was pretty unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And then, but most notably, really, actually, the reason I love it most is when Sam's carrying Frodo. I mean, that's just...
Yeah, yeah. You know, you bring up a good point. It's actually a super complex fulfillment of the quest.
Right. And it's right? A surprise, like, it's, twist at the climax, yeah.
Exactly. It could have been so much more... It could still be, like, the epic fulfillment with Frodo just walking up a hill and throwing a ring in the fire.
Right.
That's not what happens at all.
Right.
And as a result, it's like tied up with all these other sort of
complex
power dynamics we see throughout the rest of the story.
It perfectly fit with everything else too. Yeah. Even though you didn't expect it, but then when it happens, it's, oh yeah, that does perfectly fit together. You know, like, of course that's how it happened, but even if you can't even quite fully understand it, but yeah. All right. What's your number 10?
Number 10, Shadow of the Past.
Didn't make my list. It's too long.
So this one is like maybe not the most exciting chapter, but I felt like it needed to be included. It's the introduction to the reason to destroy the ring. And it starts setting the scene. Like, I feel like it's the moment when this wider world and backstory opens up to our readers, like where the horizon is broadened beyond the Shire, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't know. For the super long chapters, I'm actually more partial to Council of Elrond, but neither made my list. That chapter, though, that's where Gandalf has lines that set up the entirety of the book, you know, just going forward, right? Laying it all out there with Frodo in conversation, then.
Right.
They start getting into it, but then Frodo's already kind of instantly heroic, like, yeah, I'm willing to take this ring. And I don't know. Yeah, great chapter. All right.
Number 9?
Yeah.
Breaking of the Fellowship.
Oh yeah, you really like this one. Yeah, okay.
I think we probably already talked about it previously for a top 5 ranking. But the Breaking of the Fellowship chapter to me was like such a twist. So many things happen, and also very fundamental to like each of the characters we see. It's a complex and loaded chapter in my mind.
Yeah.
Like Sam and Frodo go off on their journey after Frodo is like kind of betrayed by Boromir, but you know, Boromir realizes his error in his dying moments. He tries to protect the hobbits, and like, yeah, all these other plot lines spring out from that moment, and it's not because like of a random event that happened. It's like it's all these complex personal narratives and personal developments that create this moment. So it's a pretty interesting one to me.
Yeah. All right, my number 9, playing off Mount Doom, Field of Cormallen. All right, so that was, I will agree with Tolkien and C.S. Lewis, that was the peak Ute catastrophe, especially since it was told from Sam's perspective. Gardner, surprisingly the most Christ-like figure. The March 25th was one of my favorite, you know, things I learned about Tolkien that got me into studying the backstory of everything, like what's really the deeper meanings of all this. One of those seeds that's the germination for this podcast, probably. You could even lump talking about priest, prophet, and king in there. We didn't because we preemptively did it, or else that one would have been too long too, you know. But and then they were in Ithilien, which is where Tolkien has some of the best, at his very best for descriptions, you know, when he's talking about the gardens and the it's right near Mordor, so it's much easier to do it because you're coming out of the blackest black and now it's beautiful countryside and everything. And it was, I don't know, that was the pinnacle of happy parts, I guess. You can't say endings, but parts, you know.
Yeah, interesting. This got an honorable mention for me, but did not make my list.
Okay, all right.
All right, and then, what do you got for 9? Are you on 8 now?
No, I do 8, right?
I think you're on 8. Yeah.
Yeah, what was your 9?
Breaking the Fellowship.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so 8, Window to the West. All right, oh, the other Ithilien chapter.
I also, this is number 8.
All right. So Window to the West, this is where you met Faramir the chapter before, but you get to know him in this chapter. This was the really big one where like everything went on. We talked about the grace thing and that led to the whole noble pagans, but then Faramir's also going through the whole history of Gondor, and that sparked an entire mini season of this show. Just from the 3-page special like, monologue season that he went on. There's other stuff that we talked about too. Him versus Boromir. I mean, it was a pretty great chapter, but why'd you like
it? Yeah. Also, all those things and amazing setting, super cool hideout, like right. one of the top, like right. just awesome Tolkien settings in the book.
Yeah. It was unexpectedly great chapter. Yeah, it was unexpected.
Also, I think maybe fair to say that Faramir is probably one of our favorite characters.
Yeah.
Or like underrated favorite characters or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. In the whole, if you look online, I think Faramir gets a lot of love from Tolkien nerds. That's true. But yeah.
In the movies and everything, he's like a secondary minor character.
That's one of the biggest mistakes of the movies is Faramir. Yeah. This whole character. They actually did a good job, but the way they wrote him, not good. But the bigger sin, I think, was not the scouring of the Shire. They needed that at the end, you know. But anyways, what's your 7 then?
Yeah, 7 in the House of Tom Bombadil, which you already touched on.
Yeah, this gets
the 7. As mentioned, I know this is not explicitly relevant to the plot of Lord of the Rings, so I know it's a little bit bold to stack it this high in the list, but I absolutely loved it. It's like one of the first things that made me fall in love with the series when I was reading.
Right.
I was like, whoa, this is cool. It was so evocative and raised so many questions for me. And honestly, the fact that it brought up more questions than it answered was, I think, what left me wanting more. It's one thing to see like world building and have things explained, but that was the moment where I was like, it almost felt like I was like glimpsing into something I couldn't understand, which just made me so curious to really like learn more about the whole Lord of the Rings backstory. And I a lot of those questions still aren't really answered, which is kind of interesting.
Right.
Easily like one of the most like random, but like mystical glimpses in the whole series.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Him remembering the first rain job, that was my favorite line of it.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Right.
Yeah. All right. So my 7 was the road to Isengard. My favorite part of it is a tie between Gimli just describing the glittering caves, because you wouldn't expect it. First of all, didn't know caves could be that beautiful. Second of all, didn't know Gimli had those descriptive powers in him. and then the other scene, in addition to all the feel-good stuff, because they walk all the way from, you know, it's a whole victory lap of a chapter, and it ends with them meeting the hobbits, who are, Isengard surprisingly conquered. But it was book 3 in the microcosm, as we said, because it was Théoden and Rohan, all these people they're seeing the Ents, they're seeing like these legends come to life in the darkest hour, and it's walking, you know, they're walking into fairy tales, or fairy tales are bursting into their world, and it's just, I love that aspect with the men in Lord of the Rings. You know, that's the difference. It's like the men, it's like, whoa, all these fairy tales are coming to life, versus the elves, it's all the nostalgia, like, this is the current call, this is the end, you know, and it's, I don't know, it's different for
that's
both,
a great
and
they're way
both,
to put it, yeah.
They're both super fun, and they were describing Orthanc in that chapter and how Saruman, you know, he tried to do it his own way. He tried to, you know, I don't know, use whatever means he could to possibly even do good. And all he ended up doing was a small imitation of Mordor, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that was also laid out in that chapter.
Mm-hmm.
All right. My 6th chapter, right? That's what we're on. Okay. Yeah. So my 6th chapter is Many Meetings. So this is when they first get to Rivendell. This chapter makes me feel like Christmas, like, you know, I guess it happened in October, but whatever. It was, I don't know, like there's a whole huge party. Everybody's there. All the characters we've known up until this point, they're all there, including even Bilbo, right, who had left for the book. And Gandalf's back. Elrond's there. Oh, the elf descriptions in this one were so cool. And then the best part. Well, it's happy the whole chapter, but then the best part by far was that Hall of Fire. Oh, where they tell all the stories, and then it was almost like a kind of like a chapel or a church, pre-Christian church, you know. But anyways, you don't even have to include that. Just the tale-telling aspect of that, and Bilbo singing the song for the elves, and it's the Elrendil one, which is one of the cooler songs in the book. So that was a pretty great chapter.
That is a great one, and yeah, that one did not make my list, but hearing you describe it, I'm Yeah, I almost wish I included it. Totally agree that that's a great one. And yeah, and that I was fully enchanted by all the elf descriptions. Oh,
I know.
At the outset. Like, I kind of forgot that that's like the first time you get like the full deep dive into like elf stuff.
Yeah. In the series. Well, right? It's arguable. It's arguable. Well, I got, we'll see.
Okay. Okay, so I'm on 6 now?
Yes.
Okay, 6, Bridge of Khazad-dûm.
Oh, wow, that's high. That's high.
I know.
It's only an honorable mention for me, too. But
I jumped around on this order a whole bit. But Bridge of Khazad-dûm, this is Moria.
Yeah.
Pretty just like epic adventure for the Fellowship.
That was the most action-packed part of Fellowship. I mean, that...
Yeah, exactly. Gandalf dies. It's like the first time they have to like come together and work so as a quick. Team.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just like a fun classic one in my mind.
Yeah. All right. Oh no, you're 5.
Oh, and then 5?
Yeah.
Okay, 5, Choices of Master Samwise.
Oh wow. Okay. Go on.
Okay, so maybe a little bit of an oddball pick, but this one I think we covered this pretty extensively in the
we did. I think it took us 2 episodes to record because we put on the Orc Souls.
Okay. Yeah. But this is a big deal one, I think, in the whole destruction of the ring and the hero journey for both Frodo and Sam. Right? This is where like Sam steps up to the plate.
Yep.
Suddenly we start seeing things in Sam's shoes for really like the first major time.
Yeah.
I'd say. And so it's a crucial one in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And also just like kind of an action packed, like, holy cow, did not see this coming.
Yeah. My thing with it is, I had said this too when we did Two Towers, if that and the Shelob's Lair were the same chapter, that easily makes it. But then this one, you get Sam fighting the spider and all his choices and like the plot and Frodo being captured and all the orc stuff, which was actually really interesting. That's the most interesting of the orc parts. But yeah, it was to divide those two. It's like, yeah, I mean, it makes perfect sense to do it. But like then compared to all the chapters, you know, 1v1, it's hard. But yeah,
fair.
Yeah, but good pick. I would agree.
Okay. What's your number 5?
My number 5 is Three's Company. All right, so this is chapter 3 of the Fellowship of the Ring. This is the first real taste of elves because they meet Gildur like it's the Fantasia scene, the Ave Maria, where they're all walking down and then they're all singing they're literally singing to Elbereth, which was like Hail Mary basically, you know. It was it was such a cool scene, and it's Frodo, Sam, Merry and Pippin, and it's like getting into the whole feast of it, and you're just, it's otherworldly, it's higher beings and everything. And then the greatest line from it was Sam just talking, like, he just remembers the apples from it. And he says, it was one of the chief experiences of his life. And and he said, if I could make apples like that, I could call myself a gardener. It's like, oh, like, I just love that idea. Nice. You know, and I might have even, that's off the, trying to just remember it off the top of my head. I think, I'm pretty sure it's close to what he said, but it's just, that was an awesome chapter. I loved that. I love that entrance that, you know, it's like, it's Bombadil even before the taste of Bombadil with that sense of wonder and just really getting into it. So, yeah.
Mm.
Similar vein, my number 4, Lothlorien. All right, I love this. This one took the cake for my favorite Fellowship chapter, still takes the cake. The Land Before Time, it was that Three's Company times 10, you know, that sense of wonder, nostalgia. You know, they're talking about Haldir and how all the elves are going to leave. And they do the cool rope crossing across the river where, you know, where they run along the ropes. And I don't know. It was just Gandalf had just died the chapter before, so they were all sad. But then they're so amazed that they forget about it, and it's such a cool place. There was a lot going on for Tolkien references and ideas about what he was drawing on and stuff. Like Lothlorien's at an angle in the rivers, and like we connected that literally to Anglo, like where the Anglo-Saxons came from. In Denmark. I mean, it was crazy how deep you went with that one.
Yeah.
So very cool chapter. Land Before Time, you know, is like outside of time and everything. You don't even meet Galadriel and Celeborn yet in it, but it was just amazing. Yeah.
This is ranked higher up for me, so I'll touch on it. in a few. Okay, am I on number four now?
Yes.
Okay, number four, Battle of Pelennor Fields.
Ooh, big dog.
Epic battle scene.
Oh yeah.
I almost struggle to say too much about it, just because it's like it's just like one of the cooler battle scenes ever. So.
Yeah.
But I mean, to jog everyone's memory, this is where Théoden gets killed.
Yep.
Éowyn and Merry take down the Black Rider. The tide finally turns.
Yep.
So
yep.
It's a big deal. And then right in close keeping with that, number three for me, Ride of the Rohirrim.
Okay.
Which is like another I know it's technically comes before Battle of Pelennor Fields, but it's like just a very like rah-rah, totally gets you fired up. So cool to see all this coming to fruition. Yeah. Like it feels like these two together are like the glorious epic war taking place.
Right.
Which is, it's kind of interesting because it's like, I'd say like the peak of like epicness in the whole book, but it's not necessarily the central focus of the book.
Right.
Which I think is an important thing to make note of. That said, they're just like so fun and like enticing to read. So it's like, whoa, cool.
Yeah. All right. So similar vein, my number three is Passage of the Grey Company. I think it's what it's called. I didn't even like use the book. I just went from memory to do all this. Like I didn't look at a single title for any of these. So hopefully I write these chapter titles right. But anyways, Passage of the Grey Company, chapter two of Return of the King. That's where Dúnedain come out. Aragorn and all of them take the paths of the dead. It was too long a chapter because they throw in all the Éowyn stuff and there's some Merry stuff. And it's like, nah, get rid of it. Just make this Aragorn. Like, this. And he looks in the Palantir. Oh, he looks in the Palantir. So but anyways, it was the best part is just Gimli's scared as hell going through it. And Aragorn has zero fear. And he's just such a good leader. And then they come through and they get all the ghosts and they're talking like he cranks. This is where the epicness really starts to get cranked up to 11 because he's just no other men could endure such a journey. You know, and it's Aragorn's will that pushed him on. These are the hardiest men that ever lived. And they're doing the most epic thing. And as we know, that was the worst route to get to Minas Tirith, by far the hardest road, you know. But Aragorn's like, hey, I'm pretty scared to do this. This is a pretty ridiculous thing. It's the hero to the underworld stuff too, you know, which is so famous and like very reminiscent of Christ the King, Harrowing of Hell stuff. I mean, it was pretty excellent. This was Aragorn getting lots of playing time, which was great to see. And yeah, just the ending of that chapter, I absolutely love it.
That's a really good one. That one did actually not make my top 15.
Really?
But once again, it's one I should have, or I do regret not including a little bit. I realized after putting this together that I was a little bit light on Aragorn stardom in my rankings.
Don't worry. You don't have to worry because it's kind of better that we just touch on other chapters instead of have the same list.
Oh, for sure.
Us agreeing with each other completely would be kind of boring.
I know.
But yeah.
I totally agree. That was a good one.
Yeah.
What was your number two?
All right. My number two was the Battle of Pelennor Fields. Love that chapter. That was the roller coaster of emotions because, all right, Théoden, he's my dude. Like the most improved award of the podcast. Pretty awesome. Old Beowulf. Great death. That episode we did was like too big. It was too big. Mm-hmm. But there's just so much to talk about. And it was great. You know, like, I mean, it's, I don't know. Like, we made it too big, but the chapter itself just has perfect pacing too. You know, like it's just, it's up and down, one good thing happens, one bad thing happens. And then it's up, you know, back, like they kill the Nazgul, Éomer being in beast mode. That was awesome. And then the Aragorn entrance is probably the most epic thing I've ever read in my life. that page entrance. It was so great. You know, like it comes from the ships and then all of a sudden you see the good banners unfurled and then Aragorn comes off with the jewel on his head and it's like, oh my gosh, talk about almost spiritual warfare, even beyond just regular warfare. It's like, yeah, this is the king of your army. Hell yeah, this is sweet, you know. And then also too, it ends with that Rohan song. And that was a cool song. Like, you know, of all mm-hmm. the dead people that, or well, all the valiantly dead people at that point. But it was, mm-hmm. I don't know, it's a big chapter, and it was pretty great. That was, you know, it doesn't have to go into hand-to-hand fight scenes, but it still achieves to be something so epic, like it could be in there with the Iliad. Oh, I had a really good throw. Yeah. This is just random. I had a really good throwaway line at some point in the show where I said Tolkien could have just wrote the 25th book of the Iliad. You know, I was like, all right, to toot my own horn. That was a good line. All right, what is your number two?
Okay, so if my three and four were kind of like the epic battle scenes, mm-hmm. my two and one are like.
I know what your two and one are at this point.
Otherworldly. I'm sure. Okay, so number two is Lothlorien.
Okay, yeah.
Which you already said some great words about. But yeah, this was like one of those moments of total fantasy where they've like entered into a realm totally different from what we've seen so far. I guess somewhat related to Rivendell, but it's like such an alluring setting. I wanted to see it for myself, and Tolkien's descriptions were completely on point. It seems like magical, but also haunting. It's like spooky and evocative and sad. You're getting a sense of this broader history. And even though we've been like looped into kind of the, I'm looking for a better word than magic, but like kind of the magic of Middle Earth at this point, Lothlorien is still transporting the Fellowship to like a realm that they don't really understand or have familiarity with. Like Rivendell was like magical, but they knew about it, and they had kind of, they knew who was there. Lothlorien was like a, even for these like legendary characters, they're entering into their own mythology.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
Just too much to handle. Yeah. And I would almost contend too. I think those were his best land descriptions of the whole.
Yeah.
Whole series. Yeah. Yeah. So.
And then number one for me is Treebeard.
Yep, knew it.
you knew it. Okay. Treebeard.
Hold on. It didn't actually make my list, partially because I knew you would have it, but yeah.
Yeah, I thought so. But not quite as like stunningly beautiful in the descriptions as Lothlorien, but totally like, to me, just quintessential Lord of the Rings, quintessential Tolkien.
Absolutely.
Where we've entered into some fantastical world that's like evoking an ancient history and a backstory we can't fully understand, and this like haunting future. And so it's like the same thing with Lothlorien, like the characters who are already like in their like legends of themselves, like are entering into a mythology that they have no familiarity with, which is so cool, so well done. And then also the similar but different for like the kind of haunting fate of the future elves and how they have to leave the world and the ages are changing. That sense of like time passing, you get with the Ents even more strongly, where they're like so tied to the age. And I mean, I think we touched on this quite a bit, but like this chapter alone, I feel like makes Tolkien like one of the more potent environmentalists of this time, like which is pretty crazy. Just when you think about when he was writing this and what had been written or not been written at that time, it's pretty tremendous that he's like put together this phenomenal work of fiction about like environmentalism before the environmental movement started, which is really cool.
Well, it makes sense too after we do like the Scouring the Shire chapter where everything's torn down and it was his childhood place too and everything.
Right. Yeah. And you get a sense of like you sense he's evoking his own history in a way.
It's not like he has a real political agenda either, you know. It's like that's how he feels, you know. And he worked into the story with one of the most creative things, you know. That was Macbeth but better, right? He got the idea from Macbeth of the moving forest and was like, no, I'm gonna have my forest actually move. I'm gonna have real trees, you know. And at least my favorite part is the marching song at the end where the Ents go to war, and it was just awe. And we had you can look it up on YouTube of Tolkien reading the Ents marching song, and it's just he knocks that one out of the park. That was one of the best things he read.
To Isengard, the Ents cried in many voices, to Isengard. To Isengard, the Isengard be ringed and barred with doors of stone. The Isengard be strong and hard and cold as stone and bare as bone. We go, we go, we go to war to hew the stone and break the door. For bowl and bow are burning now, the furnace roars, we go to war. To land of gloom with tramp of doom, with roll of drum, we come, we come. To Isengard, with doom we come, with doom we come, with doom we come.
My number one should be obvious by now since I haven't said it. Ride of the Rohirrim. That was, all right, it's for two reasons. The first being the Druidane, you know, the Woses, all right? So absolutely not necessary to the story. You could have cut these guys out easily, but it's just such a, for being the best, like my favorite chapter, the fact that there's just this random part to it at the beginning that, you know, just kind of throws it off, but it's just adds on and then deeply enriches the chapter. I think it's just sweet. So it's like, you know, unlikely allies everywhere throughout this book. You get it at this most awesome of moments, you know, and it's completely unexpected again. You know, that's that. I love that. And then that charge at the end. Oh my gosh. Like the whole thing. So you, Tolkien does like, that's like the longest thing he reads besides the Gollum Hobbit conversation. It's, you can look it up on YouTube again. Ride of the Rohirrim, J.R.R. Tolkien reading it. It's 7 or 9 minutes long or something like that. And he just goes to town on it.
Tall and proud he seemed again. And rising in his stirrups, he cried in a loud voice, more clear than any there had ever heard a mortal man achieve before. Arise, arise, riders of Theoden. Fell leads awake, fire and slaughter. Spear shall be shaken, shield be splintered, sword day, red day ere the sun rises. Ride to Gondor.
It's Théoden, the old man. Like, this is that's the coolest part. Is that's the best speech in the book at the end, and he kind of gives two speeches. And that's the best part. Is like you said, he's not the most consequential character in this whole story, but he is one of the most fun, and I think one of the ones that Tolkien had the most fun with, you know, writing for it. And you know, Aragorn, yes, he has the grand entrance in the next chapter, but I mean, this guy, where you look where he is when he starts Two Towers, when we first see him, and then 2 weeks later he's doing this, riding to Gondor, dying heroically. Oh, it was just awesome, encouraging his people. These, I don't know, Rohan and Théoden just went up so much in my book doing this podcast, and I love that charge. Great movie scene, but then the book just even outdistances it just so much more. It's crazy. But yeah, that's my number one.
Up in music. And the blowing of the horns of Rohan in that hour was like a storm upon the plain and a thunder in the mountains. Ride now, ride now, ride to Gondor. Suddenly the king cried to Snowmane, and the horse sprang away. Behind him his banner blew in the wind, white horse upon a field of green, but he outpaced it. After him thundered the knights of his house, but he was ever before them. Elmer rode there, the white horse tail on his helm, floating in his speed. On the front of the first Eorred roared like a breaker foaming to the shore, but Théoden could not be overtaken. Fey he seemed, or the battle fury of his fathers ran like new fire in his veins. And he was born upon snowmen like a god of old, even as Oromi the Great in the Battle of the Valar when the world was young. His golden shield was uncovered, and lo, it shone like an image of the sun, and the grass flamed into green above the white feet of his steed. For morning came, morning in a wind from the sea, and darkness was removed, and the hosts of Mordor wailed, and a terror overtook them, and they fled and died, and the hoofs of wrath rode over them. And then all the host of Rohan burst into song, and they sang as they slew, for the joy of battle was on them, and the sound of their singing that was fair and terrible came even to the city.
So, we've done the power rankings. Final countdown's done. Mm-hmm. Heavy lifting's mostly done for this. Downhill for the rest of this episode. You got any major highlights that you loved about doing this, or what you learned more? You know, not really what influenced you yet, or you know, really moved you or anything, but like just other things, especially in addition to beyond just the Lord of the Rings episodes itself. You know, chapter by chapter, because we did a bunch of special episodes.
Yeah, everything. Absolutely. Yeah, and I was going to say, looking back at this, like, so I was going back and listening to some old episodes and looking at all the whole list together, I was actually amazed how many specials we did. I don't think I realized in the moment. Yeah. There's a ton, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
But and most of them were Lord of the Rings focused, but like the philology special or the architecture special, I particularly enjoyed.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, the architecture one. Honestly, the architecture one was so much fun. And that one, like,
you know,
it's fun when I'm laughing the whole time when I'm editing it. That's what it was. That was great. A good one. That was a very fun one.
So I was thinking about this. I was kind of like, you know, even though I know our episodes like run long and we'd always be like kind of trying to really stay on top of things.
Yeah.
These times that we like went off the rails a little bit were some of my favorite.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Favorite bits, because ultimately I like this kind of, what I really enjoyed was like the blurring of history and mythology and fact and fiction, which I actually think is what Tolkien would have really appreciated himself,
right.
Like, you know, that we're not seeing like this stark divide between fantasy and history or something like that, but we're like, you know, stitching together culture and history at the same time.
And you're talking about when we're talking about it in the show.
Exactly. Right. Like what, you know, when we go off on tangents to talk about the etymology of a word, or like, you know, movement of people across prehistoric Europe or whatever, that like that stuff is so fun to learn about for me, or to think about, and the connections that we made between things is really like, I felt like that sort of Renaissance, well-rounded approach to a lot of these topics was probably my favorite overall theme, favorite recurring trope or whatever.
Right. Yeah, I thought, I was surprised. So I was going through all the Hobbit ones and it's like, all right, these are, you know, light compared to the Lord of the Rings episodes. like light, L-I-T-E, you know? But when we got to the dragon special, I listened to that, it was just, holy crap, that was big. You know, and that was still held up, in my opinion. In my opinion, but it still held up, and that was pretty legit. And that was, I remember at the time, it's like, man, that was a monster episode. You know, pun intended, or not intended, but yeah, whatever. So, but that was a big episode. And at the end of it, literally, I end it with, "We're probably never going to do anything that big again." And then there's at least a dozen. As big as that. I mean, every single one was a pain in the ass and a bunch of work, but definitely worth it and fun. But, you know, for the tangent that you're talking about, just dragon, unexpected stuff, it was pretty great. The same with, I thought that was the same with the Council of Elrond episodes. That one was the only chapter, I think, that we had to break into two. Two episodes, at least. There's some chapters where we took our time. Maybe combined two, but that one, and though I think we might have recorded it in one night and then I put it out as two episodes, but I knew it was two because it was just too big. And I remember being impressed with that one when I re-listened to it. As concepts, I love the nostalgia of the elves and that, you know, the fairy tales come to life, as I said, with the men. It's just, I couldn't get over that, you know, because the Fellowship of the Ring, it's just, that book, it's from another time period. You know? I mean, it's just, and you miss it, even though this is fiction. But and then the fairy tales come to life.
I totally agree. Like the just as we were saying with the power rankings, like Tolkien's ability to evoke that like unstoppable epochal shift, like the way he evoked time, it was is so powerful and resonant with me that like that's. I think one of the things that kept me, I don't know, like kind of like thirsty for more or something like that.
Yeah.
Like curious and interested in it. Yeah. Totally drew me in from the outset.
My favorite game has to be End Sentences. Those are so funny.
Those are good. Those are good.
I mean, my favorite was the Ferris Bueller one that I wrote. I mean, that was,
I didn't stand a chance. Did I get that one? I don't remember. I feel like I probably didn't get it.
I don't think you got it. You got it pretty quick as soon as I started to help you out just a little bit. But yeah, and off the cuff. But like the funny part was I thought I was making it obvious with all the references, but then if you have too many references, you just actually end up bogging down the other person, you know? But oh my gosh, that was a fun game. Other fun one, our Chariots of Fire movie review. That was a good one too. The biggest thing that we, or you too, because you're wrapped into this, but more so me, like just biting off more than I could chew, was the True Myth specials. But I thought those turned out pretty good considering we're not qualified to do that in any way. So I don't know. This is fun. And
that one, yeah, that one, I definitely did plenty of like, supplemental snippets of reading for different things you sent me over the thing. But that was the only time I like read a whole book I wouldn't have read otherwise, just for a special episode. And it was really cool because I didn't know anything really about Chesterton.
Right.
It's a wild book. Or a lot of that history and philosophy.
So. Yeah, highly recommend. You kind of got to build up to it though. So read other stuff from like read ancient mythologies and stuff, and then probably other, I don't know, big history books, and then religious books. But Everlasting Man, that's quite the pinnacle of G.K. Chesterton. That's a pinnacle of literature in my book. other episode that was really fun, in addition to the philology one, but the Beowulf one I thought was even more fun. We did a pretty good job with that book. Again, not qualified to do it. And then that token essay was awesome. And I remember, I was starting to read it the night before because I was at least going to read where he does the famous allegory with the tower, the knocked over tower, and then like everybody just wants to re-knock down the tower, But then I got through it and I started it and I was like, oh crap, this is really good. So I had to read the whole thing and it was like 40 pages, but totally worth it. Very awesome. I liked our Leaf by Nigel and the Smith of Wootton major specials too. I actually liked the Smith one more than the Nigel one, which I was surprised by because I liked the Nigel story more originally. Maybe not anymore. I don't really know. But the special that probably has the biggest place in my heart, because this was, the most ambitious editing one, was the Music of the Ainur. That was... I don't know. I enjoy listening to at least, the first 15 minutes of that very much. And that was, a lot of work to string those songs, or the pieces together, all the classical music. But that would, I think it turned out pretty well. Pretty good. And that one was literally the best I could have done at that point. Maybe now if I did it, I could improve it a little bit more. But at that time, that was, took a lot of energy,
to say. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
All right. Do you have anything else, or?
Should we move on to big takeaways? Yeah. What we learned?
Yeah. All right. So Clifford, takeaways, anything super influential from the show? What'd you really learn that's really going to stick with you, going forward or anything? Do you have any of these?
Yeah. I mean, so obviously I learned plenty of Lord of the Rings history backwards and forwards, and maybe I even remembered some Silmarillion history. learned plenty about Tolkien, his life, 20th century England, and the whole context that he was living in. But also, as I alluded to earlier, so much like world history and mythology that I didn't expect to cover or go into so much depth. I feel like I've got a better handle on so many bits and pieces, maybe not strung together, like always super cohesively.
Yeah.
But that's been super cool. Like, I know you're a little bit more of a European history buff, but like hearing about the Punic Wars or the invasions of the Visigoths or whatever is so interesting. And yeah. I'll definitely remember a lot of that, and I'm interested to learn more. And then one kind of major takeaway, as I alluded to, as kind of like a favorite part, was like this connection between history and mythology, or like myths, world history, linking them together. This talking about all this stuff and analyzing it really, I think, has changed my perspective on, I don't want to keep saying mythology because it can sound like too limiting of a word, but it's changed my perspective on mythology and like how we humans create stories. And how they're related to our histories, which are also stories that we create. Like, it's, I don't know, I feel like I have such a better, like, holistic, balanced view of this than I did previously. Where I before the show, I would have been very inclined to say, like, yeah, there's things that actually happened, and then there's the stories that people told about them.
Right.
And now I feel like a lot more, I'm not versed in, like, liberal arts English literature education, but it seems to me like Tolkien's actually almost a bit of a postmodern perspective with some of this stuff, where he's like rooted in he like breaks the fourth wall a lot.
Okay.
Where we like see the people writing the story.
Oh yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or he's like talking to the audience.
Right.
That's a very like contemporary perspective on ancient literature.
Yeah.
And it ties in perfectly with this idea of like the mythology is the history. It's like it's happening in the present. The fantastical ideas are influencing real actions, and then the real actions are being recorded in semi-fantastical ways. Like, they're so much more closely linked than I think I would have given them credit
for. If you wouldn't mind me adding this on, too, I would say, like...
Sure, sure.
They had a trajectory, too, you know?
Definitely. What about you? What were your takeaways? All right,
so I narrowed it down... I narrowed it down to two really big ones of stuff that kind of hasn't been mentioned yet. So...
Okay.
The first one's very personal. Okay. So the whole hero's journey stuff, I knew all that and everything, but I don't know. I also started working on this around Easter of 2018. So at this point, this thing's 4 full years old, even though episodes didn't come out till like the fall, late fall of 2018. Right. So anyways, though, 4 years is a long time, and there's been a lot of other factors going on and everything, but the biggest factor doing this podcast is what's basically, you know, I'm not the same person I was 4 years ago. And this podcast, doing it in particular, is, I think, the biggest single factor. All right. At this point, I'm undoubtedly much wiser. And I'm smarter, too. But the wiser is more important. All right. And, you know, like, even just kind of the ability to read and extract meaning from stuff and, like, do it on a time crunch or do it and kind of timely fashion. Like, I mean, we miss deadlines, you know, our fictional deadlines. So a good amount. But I mean, you know, this is, I'm much more like efficient and practical. And then that even leads to me being, I think, more confident and even like braver than I was. And, you know, that's partially like what I'm learning from the show, but then also just literally doing it has, I don't know, set me up for more success, I guess, you know. And I would say,
yeah,
even just more interesting and fun too, you know. and I think this was a very excellent creative outlet for me, and I think for you too. But I mean, you have a more creative job than me, but like, yeah, I always knew I was like, I had some sort of creative abilities. There's just never anywhere to channel it into, and this was really one of the first things. And then from there, it kind of just begat more creative projects, you know, and that, which is partially why, which is partially why the show is running long, is because I just have other stuff going on now too that I just got roped into, biting off more than I could chew again, you know. But I don't know, it's been a good mental exercise, you know, like really sharpening the brain and probably the heart and soul as well for me. And honestly, like, I don't know, this is something like, I think you would hope that's what happens at college, you know, at least that was probably the ideal a while ago. I don't know if that's the ideal, or I don't know if that's the reality for a large majority of people anymore, but yeah, I don't know. It seems like I'm kind of getting that a few years later almost, you know. All right. And then the other thing that we kind of haven't mentioned yet is Sam and Frodo's conversations about like the great stories never ending, you know, like they have that conversation on the stairs of Cirith Ungol, and, you know, cause they see the star of Arendelle, and, you know, they realize like they're in that same story with like the Silmarillion. It's continued all the way down to them. And it just, it really hit me how important teaching our kids are about the past and like our stories and everything. And it almost even made me like hostile at some points to like fantasy writing. Definitely like the Hollywood Marvel movies and stuff. I can't stand them. You know, like it made me hostile to that kind of stuff. But like the ironic thing is like, you know, even some fiction or very popular fiction, it's like, I'm learning this from my favorite fictional story, you know, like that's ironic, right? But it's like, you know, this is like the idea of Sam at the end reading this whole story to his kids, and then those kids writing it down and like, you know, passing out copies of the books and everything. And it's like this kind of story is meant to be read aloud. And it's like, yeah, read Lord of the Rings aloud to your kids too. But it's like, don't forget all the great stories of the past too, and what we can learn from all those, like what you're saying, where it's not just a myth, you know, it's history and the myth and everything that you learn from it, and all goes together and it's got a trajectory, you know? So, I mean, I don't know. It was all that stuff that I think was, pretty big and important, I would have to say. And, other places you see that too. It's the Hall of Fire and the Cottage of the Lost Play. You know, that those are the other two big ones in addition to the stairs there.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Pretty cool. And the trees are sweetly blooming. The wild
mountain time grows around. So, Clifford, we're finally at the end. You're finally going to have time freed up. What's next?
Well, I am moving yet again. Not too far. I'm going to grad school next year at University of California, Berkeley. I'm going to be doing a Master's of Science in Architecture, kind of a sustainability focus. And yeah, be hopefully taking some time to read and learn and use my brain in a different way. Yeah. So looking forward to it. How about yourself?
Time to finish this off too.
I know. Yeah.
So the first thing I think I'm going to do is I'm going to catch up on a lot of reading. There's a bunch of cycling stuff, creative stuff that I do with the cycling as well at this point. So I'm going to put more energy into that. Put more energy into work stuff too, so that I can make a better living even.
Nice.
And then that I've had for a couple months, probably like 6 months at this point, I've had a list of hobbies I'm not allowed to start yet. And, you know, stuff on that list is like teach myself piano, learn a language, you know. And now I'm really more confident and ambitious to actually do that. And I'm pretty, yeah, like I said, confident that I could if I really set my mind to it and want to do it. But so yeah,
that's really cool.
I don't really know exactly what the future holds, but it's
for the listeners out there who might be interested, what is your cycling podcast called?
Cycling Odysseys. That's all we'll say about that, but I don't know how long.
Highly recommend.
So yeah, that one's it's different than this. Then again, it's kind of not. That's the whole thing. But yeah, all right. And then, yeah, I don't know. Clifford, if you ever get bored and you ever want to do another podcast of more books, no time soon, but somewhere down the line, I'd be down.
Cool. That sounds good.
But yeah.
Here at the end of all things.
Right. So I don't know. It's kind of hard to close this out after so long. You can't really plan this, prepare it, but I'm sure we'll play out Auld Lang Syne. That's the New Year's song, but it's really like the parting, like remember old times sake kind of song. So we'll play it out with that. But Clifford, if you don't have anything else, you can send us off. Thanks for listening, everybody.
All right, thanks y'all.
And that is it.
Bravo.
Congrats, dude.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.